the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, and apparently I cannot talk this afternoon. And I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers, of course, the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host with me this afternoon, recording on a Tuesday, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, for episode 548. You wouldn't know this. Like, you should think I would know how to do this, but this is my fourth recording of the day as I've started recording the opponent preview shows. I've already booked all 14 opponent shows. Three of them are in the books. This week with Seth and I, we're doing two shows. It's our yearly segments, the yearly shows about NFC West rankings. And we're going to split those up into two, so you don't have to listen for us for like 2.5 hours. We're going to talk about the offense in this edition. And then later on the week, we will have the defensive rankings. And then, you know, Seth gets a couple of weeks off, and then I will, over the next couple of weeks, release the opponent preview shows. I might be able to do one a day up until we come back for our training camp preview the week the training camp starts. Seth, you getting ready for a busy holiday this weekend, and as we're now officially 3 weeks away from the beginning of camp.
Yeah, and I mean, we're getting closer to that, and you and I were talking off the air. This is the most intriguing camp I can remember in probably 3 or 4 years. Not, you know, not the most important or the most this or that. Just like, we still are trying to figure out what these coaches and obviously front office and all these guys are, how they think about things. And yeah, this is, I think, obviously we don't know, but I think it's going to start to clear up a little bit this season. We'll see kind of what they value, but we still also understand that they're basically only on year two of a almost complete rebuild. I mean, the defense has, you know, what, two, maybe three holdovers. The offense, really, outside of Kyler in for what we would consider the long term. I mean, James Conner and Will Hernandez, but both those guys' contracts are up at the end of the year. So, like, just what exactly they value and how they value and how they go about evaluating. Like, this is the first time we're going to really get to see, you know, their guys as they move forward. So it's going to make it intriguing because, let's be honest, I mean, training camp's exciting for a week, and then it's just like, okay, let's get to the real football stuff, because this is getting kind of boring.
Yeah, we pay attention to what's going on the field. Then you got preseason games, but if Seth does it like me, I will put together a pre-training camp 53-man roster prediction, and then basically each weekend after that, based on, okay, what do we see in the early part of training camp? What do we see in the preseason game one? We'd see preseason game two. And then kind of there. And what you're going to see in July leading up to camp from my site is basically one of three things. It's kind of like the overarching. I don't know how much news we're going to get. And so I started yesterday. I'm going to do a series for every position, questions at each position, leading up to camp. Then I'm going to do probably a feature on every single player, just the background. So what they did, how they've done, what they're expected, questions about what they have and kind of their outlook. And then the other part is what these shows are about. And then you will get the print version online on my site over the next couple of weeks. And that is ranking the players and the position groups around the NFC West, something we've done for many, many years. And this is the offensive side of the ball. And so we will talk about the quarterbacks. We'll talk about the running backs, the receivers, the tight ends, and the offensive line. Talking about, well, at least the quarterback will go starters, backups. The running backs will do, you know, rank the top top running backs and then the rooms. We'll look at receivers individually and then the rooms. We'll look at the tight ends and then the pairings, like the top two. And then we'll kind of go by offensive line, we'll by each position, and then as a unit. So we start off, we'll start off with the quarterback position, which is kind of an intriguing. We've got four quarterbacks that are definitely starting quarterbacks. We got Brock Purdy in San Francisco, at Kyler Murray here, you got Matthew Stafford. So the quarterbacks haven't changed. The starters have not changed at all in the NFC West. How would you rank those starters 1 to 4 entering this year? I guess it not necessarily of where they are, but where how you would rank them going into this season.
You know, I would start with I think you have to put Matthew Stafford as the top guy. You know, I've gone back and forth on that quite a bit, and his play itself, the physical abilities have definitely fallen. But you look at what he did last year in 15 games, you look at the difference he makes for that team and that franchise. You know, I know quarterback wins is not a stat that people love or anything like that, but 9-6 and kind of willed that team without Cooper Kupp for, you know, a third of the season. I think he's got to be the top guy right now. Now, I say all that with the caveat of when you're talking about a guy that's going into his age 36 season, that's already 36. He will be 36 for the entire year. And especially with all of his arm injury history, we're talking about a guy that could literally just fall off a cliff tomorrow. I mean, it is one of those situations, especially at quarterback, where it just becomes a question mark about what is the remaining time he has in the league look like? Because at any point in time, and we saw it with Carson Palmer, right? Like those guys just immediately fall off a cliff. And it's not that they don't have the ability that they once had. It's just that they can't physically do it anymore. And especially when you look at Stafford, when you talk about Stafford, what are the things that we always talk about with Stafford more than anything else? It's that arm, right? Like he makes throws that just are absurd. Once that starts to go, you know, he's going to be able to still make throws because he's so cerebral and he's been doing this for a long time, but all of a sudden, you know, the arm strength isn't there anymore, and now it's a little harder, and those windows are a little smaller, and you know, it all of a sudden, instead of a 24-11 season, you know, it's a 22-16 season in terms of touchdown to interceptions, right? And we saw with Palmer, obviously, and no offense to Carson Palmer, Stafford has, you know, had a better career, likely Hall of Fame career, and obviously has the Super Bowl to back that up now. And I would still put him at the top, but it's always interesting when these guys get to that age. I mean, and as a guy that's 38, going to be 39 this year, you know, you say, oh, 36, he's old. But, you know, in terms of the NFL, it could be at any time. And please, please, please don't tell me about Tom Brady, because there's only one of those guys ever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For me, that's why actually I have Stafford number 3 this year. I have Stafford number 3. As good as he is entering this year, and we look at Matthew Stafford's numbers last year, which were, they weren't wow, but they also weren't bad. They were, if you look at, aside for, you know, the 9-game season he played in 2022 when he missed things, but he didn't get 4,000 yards, the 24 touchdowns. Now, granted, they had a good running game with Kyron Williams. And I think more for me, I put Stafford 3rd because I'm bullish on Kyler Murray this year because of what I think he's going to accomplish. But, I mean, Brock Purdy's number 1. say what you want about the talent of Brock Purdy. Like, there's like, you look at what he's done over the last year and a half. You're like, he's, whether you believe that he could have the same success with a different roster, he's still top dog in this division to me. Then it goes Murray, because I think we're going to see, assuming he stays healthy, that we're going to see him having gotten it together. And what kind of what we saw over the last three games of this last season will kind of be the level of play we see for most of this season, which is going to be great. So Purdy, Murray, Stafford, and Geno Smith, as good as he is, he's still the fourth best quarterback in this division. That doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing, but it's just look at the quarterbacks in the division.
Yeah, and mine would just be flip 1 and 3. I would have Purdy at 3. I think he has the easiest go of any of the quarterbacks, like you said. You know, it's not a knock on him. He still performs at an incredible rate and level. But I think if you put Stafford or Murray in that situation, they not only perform at the same level, potentially perform better. That's how I kind of always go about things. Like if you just removed each person from their situation, put them in the other situation, where would they fall? And I think Purdy would probably, I mean, there's a good chance he would be fourth, but you know, I would go 1 Stafford, 2 Murray, 3 Purdy, and then 4 Geno. And again, it's not anything against Geno. It's not, I think this is probably, you know, the best division in the NFL in terms of quarterback play. You know, depending on what happens in the AFC North with Deshaun Watson.
Well, and then question marks in Pittsburgh, but when you've got Lamar Jackson and you've got Joey Burrow.
Yeah. And so those guys, you know, are fantastic. And so but I think just from, like you said, top to bottom, you're probably talking about the best division in terms of 1 through 4 quarterbacks. And quite frankly, I don't have a problem with yours. Like I said, it's nothing against Purdy. I would just say that, again, he has the easiest. Now, from an expectation standpoint, nobody has it harder.
Nobody actually has it easier with that offensive scheme and the skill players they got. And my goodness, and for me, it's just like, no matter how much I can try to discount talent or the arm talent that he's got, he just keeps performing over and over and over and over again, I'm like, okay, you're good. But we'll see. We'll see once they pay you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the other question, right? You look at the numbers and you know, you and I were succinct and correct in our evaluation of you know, the Kyler Murray contract. Whether or not you now want to say like he's, you know, still overpaid as a top, you know, 12 quarterback, that's fine. But we saw the writing on the wall. I mean, at this point, like, you know, the $45 million or whatever, I know it's like 48 this year, but like the $45 million annual type of thing is not crazy. And then when you actually factor in, like, look at what Trevor Lawrence is getting, you know, $5,275. And we're having this conversation, and obviously, you know, we're not 49ers fans, so you do whatever you want. But, like, can you imagine, one, not paying Brock Purdy, but two, paying Brock Purdy $55 million a year? Like, and if they don't get it done...
It's going to happen too.
Well, and now we're getting to the point where we're talking about potentially, you know, 56, 57 million a year, because especially if he has a good season next year, right? Like, I mean, we're just getting to the point where these contracts and these numbers are so absurdist that, you know, it's baffling that the foresight wasn't there. And again, if your response is, I just wouldn't have paid him. Okay, I can get that. But when people were like, you know, oh my gosh, he's the highest or third or fourth, whatever it was at the time, paid quarterback, it's like, yeah, the market's going to change drastically in the next year. And in 3 years, it's going to be like, oh, this is, you know, this is what a top 12 quarterback has to be paid if you want. I mean, you know, and so that's what's going to be interesting to kind of watch unfold, because that, you know, part of what we've talked about, and we're already seeing it with Brandon Ayuk, who we'll get to shortly, like, they can't pay everybody. Like, that's just the rules. And so how is this going to unfold? Because if you start to take away that, how are they going to be able to deal with it? So, you know, like I said, for me, it's still Stafford, and then, you know, but I can get where you're coming from, especially with what you're talking about from the, hey, like, let's just be honest, the guy that's had the most success the last 2 years is Brock Purdy, and it's not particularly close.
No, it's been ridiculous. Like, his numbers, like, almost every metric you look at and you're like, it's hard to ignore at this point. So I'm like, okay, all right, fine. But the backups, every team has a new backup quarterback this year. The Cardinals traded for Desmond Ridder. The Rams have Jimmy Garoppolo, familiar face. The 49ers signed Joshua Dobbs. And then the Seattle Seahawks acquired Sam Howell. All have been starting quarterbacks. Now, Dobbs is, you know, was the least starter-like. He was given a starting job here last year because of the Kyler Murray situation. And then he, you know, went into a starting job in Minnesota because of Kirk Cousins' injury. But Jimmy Garoppolo was a legitimate starter. Desmond Ridder was drafted to be a starter. You know, Sam Howell began the year as a starter for the Commanders last year. How would you rank those four quarterbacks in terms of backups?
You know, it's still tough to not have Jimmy G as the top guy in that situation, especially when you go into the fact that, you know, he playing in that Sean McVay scheme would probably likely be very effective. So I would say he's probably number one.
Agreed. I have Jimmy. Because he, like, and that in itself, he is an above average starter when he's right. Healthy. So I'm like, he's an above average starter. Like, he could start for a team. The problem is you can't count on him because of his injuries.
Right. And then number two, it just becomes what's your flavor, right? Like, from the standpoint of, like, doing great in a scheme, it's probably Dobbs, right? Just from the situation. But at the same time too, we kind of saw that magic really, really peter out at the end of the season, right?
Like both places. Like, he was right. it was almost like, you know what it felt like? When it's like, he has the best playground football instincts, right?
Right. Well, and that's what's funny, you know, and again, I know a lot of people hate quarterback stats and or quarterback wins and stuff like that. But for all the bluster, he was 3-9 last year as the starter.
Yeah. And his numbers like he had a few good games, but then like his games that he were not good in, they were bad. They were bad.
And ironically, to that point, they weren't like, obviously not a shot, but realistic, they weren't like Clayton Toon against the Browns bad, right? But they were his career averages. So like all of a sudden he played to who he's always been. Yeah. And that's what's always interesting to me about the whole situation. So that being said, you know, you kind of hit it on the head. Like, if you put him in a situation for two games, and that's how we're looking at it, right? Like, if 2 to 3 games, who do you trust to win those 2 to 3 games? I think you would say right now it would be Garoppolo, and then it's, you look at each situation and you go, okay, let's see how this goes. Again, I think for Seattle, you put them at the bottom, and not because of Sam Howell, but because there's just so much unknown about the situation.
Oh, I have Howell at the bottom because of Howell, because he's not that, like, his seat, like, Dobbs' ceiling seemed to be a little bit higher than Howell's, which is crazy, but then Howell got replaced by Jacoby Brissett. And honestly, I've got Desmond Ridder as the number two guy. I don't know how he'll look here, but the fact of the matter is that he's a very mediocre starting quarterback. Okay, he could start and play mediocre. He's 8-9. He's super mediocre. 14 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 8 wins, 9 losses in 2 seasons that he started 17 games. Dobbs is, he looks good and then he's bad. And Sam Howell looks good and then he's bad. And Desmond Ridder, he's just remarkably mediocre.
Well, and that's what's so funny about the whole situation, right? Is like if you ask people last year who was the better quarterback, I would assume at least every non-fan of the team that had Dobbs would say Dobbs. But the reality is that's not the story the numbers or the situation tell, and that's what, like you said, that's what's kind of ironic about it, is that, you know, Ridder is the definition of average, whereas Dobbs has just never really been good for longer than, you know, maybe a game or two. Like you said, like you have those games. Like the fact that this dude only won 3 games last year is kind of crazy to think about. I mean, as a starter, he's 3-11. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think that there's not a team that's in a better situation if their starter goes down for an extended period of time than the Rams. But I think every team is not in a bad position if they need a guy for 2 games,
yeah.
which is, you know, again, the quarterback situation here or in the NFC West is kind of crazy to just even say that, because that's just not how quarterbacking usually works, right? Usually it's like, oh, this, like, if they lose Purdy, they're done. Now, obviously, again, whether it's, you know, the Cardinals or the Niners, if you lose that starter, you're in trouble. But I don't think we'd be shocked if Josh Dobbs was, you know, 1-1 or 2-1 if he had to start 2 or 3 games for the Niners.
Right. Coming next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk and Love, we move on to the running back and receiving rooms in the NFC West. That's coming next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, but our Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking about running backs. I don't think we need to spend much time. Christian McCaffrey should be and is the number one running back in the NFC West, and I don't think there's any question, because you should probably say that he's the number one running back in the NFL, right? We don't have to argue with that?
Yep.
Okay, 2, 3, 4 in terms of the starters. I order them like this. I go James Conner, Kyren Williams, and Kenneth Walker. Now, I will say, again, this division has some really good running backs. I put Connor just above Kyren Williams because we've also seen him do things in the pass game. He wasn't used much in the pass game this year, but he is, I believe, a more complete back, and he does have the same type of impact in terms of production. We've seen year after year, Connor gets love around the league like one of the top backs in the NFL, and just hasn't played enough games to consistently get that. And I think last year we saw kind of his finest work as a runner. Now, if he can just stay healthy, he's a guy that could, you know, who could rush for 1,200, 1,300 yards in a season. Kyren won't, but I liked his, he has the ability in the pass game to do more. Kyren Williams hasn't done it, but was a beast in the run game. And Ken Walker, just in year two, wasn't as dynamic as he was as a rookie.
Well, and that's the interesting thing is, as you said, there's really, you know, no debate or conversation that needs to be had because it's Christian McCaffrey and then everybody else. The debate becomes, because everybody's going to talk about, obviously the injury history of James Conner and like, well, you can't trust him. Kyren Williams, you know, 12 games last year. Again, not anything, a shot at him. He's phenomenal. Very, you know, has been very good for what he's done. And then obviously, like you said, from a production standpoint, Kenneth Walker was definitely the lowest rated, but he's also missed time in both seasons, only played 15 games both seasons. So if you're going to knock Connor, you have to kind of take that same energy with the other guys as well. Now, from that perspective, I would have the same order. I just don't, you know, I think you like the upside of Walker, but last year was a bit of a surprise, right? Like you said, you had a rookie year where, you know, over 1,000 yards. Yeah, 9 touchdowns. And then last year, he barely scraped above 4 yards per carry. And again, that's kind of what we're saying about the entire situation in Seattle. It's not that it's bad or you know, we think Geno's bad or anything like that. It's just, it's kind of, okay, let's see what happens because we just don't know with this group.
If we look at the rooms, if we're going to go by duos now, you've got San Francisco with McCaffrey and Elijah Mitchell. You've got the Cardinals with James Conner. And we'll presume Trey Benson, but that could also be Michael Carter, potentially Mario DiMercato. But most project Trey Benson to be that number two guy. The Rams have Kyren Williams and their rookie Blake Corum. And then Seattle has Walker and Zach Charbonnet, who was a rookie last season. If you were to, who's your top duo of the division for you?
Yeah, I think it's still San Francisco. It's tough to oversell just how good they are. And let's be honest, Elijah Mitchell was a freak. It's just that they don't need him.
Right, like, right. Like, he's a guy that had 900 some on yards as a rookie.
Yeah.
But I think that the McCaffrey impact is that great. Mitchell could start for a lot of other teams, and he's had some injury issues as well. But I would agree, McCaffrey, Mitchell at the top. Who's your number two? Mine's a while I have Seattle, I have Walker fourth. I like the duo of Walker and Charbonnet a little bit better than the other two teams. And I think it's simply because we saw Charbonnet as a rookie and the other two teams, Cardinals and Rams, have rookies projected to be their number two.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I mean, like you said, when you're projecting Kyren Williams Blake Corum and Trey Benson, no offense to either of those guys, both very talented. I think both franchises are excited about what they could be. You still have to take what has been over them. And you know, like you said, Zach Charbonnet has been a good NFL running back. So I'm with you. I would say it's Seattle. And then, you know, again, it's pick your flavor. Like, do you have more faith in Arizona or do you have more faith in Los Angeles in terms of who's going to stay healthy? You know, Williams and Corum both have an injury history. Trey Benson has been mostly healthy through his career. Obviously, we know about James Conner. So I think you can give the nod to the Cardinals right now and that with the understanding of, like, we're splitting hairs. You know, we're not saying, oh, this is a terrible running back room like we would with the Cardinals a couple years ago, right? Like, we're saying, oh, this is a good running back room. I just want to see a full season of Kyren Williams. I want to see Blake Corum in the NFL before I give them, you know, flowers above guys that have performed.
Right. And in the case, if you needed Benson, if, for example, if both Connor and Kyren are out, so you've got Benson and Corum. Corum was a very steady producer. Benson's a home run hitter. Like, he adds an element that Corum doesn't quite have.
Well, and we haven't seen Corum look the same since the knee. Last year was a haggard season. If you look at his statistics, you know, and so you want to see a full year of him getting back to being that dynamic runner that he was previous to the knee injury that like made him kind of look like a 3 yards in a cloud of dust runner that he was last year.
Going to the receiver position, who is your number one receiver in the division?
You know, it's tough because you'd probably want to say DK Metcalf, but I think through the division and all of that, I don't know. Is it Ayuk?
I've got Ayuk there. I think like it looked like last year he put it together because he's got the size, he's got great speed, he's got playmaking. He looked like that guy. And for me, I don't even have DK. Like DK is, I have DK fifth in the division.
Well, and you look at it. I mean, you've got a guy. You know, so if you go Ayuk one, which I'm fine with, you have Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, and they're probably your two and three, right?
They are two and three.
And you could probably debate yourself into who you put where. And then I would put Metcalf at four.
I got Debo at four. I have Debo at four.
I would have Metcalf over Debo simply for the reason that I want to see more, like, again, kind of like I talked about with Corum, Debo hasn't looked the same. You know, he lacked that dynamic ability that he had the previous season. And they're kind of locked into him just because of his salary, and people are looking at it the same way. They're like, I need to see more from him. 15 games, only 892 yards receiving. Last year, you know, only 225 yards rushing, which, you know, isn't bad at all for most receivers. But, you know, to go from a guy that, you know, 2 years ago, three years ago, technically now in 2021, that was over 1,400 yards receiving and over 300 yards rushing with 8 rushing touchdowns, to under 900 and just over 200. Like, it's a huge, huge difference. And you kind of have seen the wear and tear. I mean, last year, 15 games, the year before that, 13 games. Like, it, how much longer can he continue to take the beating that he was, even at his size? You know, everybody talks about the fact, you know, you're talking about a guy that's 6 foot, 220 pounds, built like a running back. You know, the usage and the touches, how are they going to line up? And that year that he was an all pro, you know, he had 136 touches, and those touches have reduced each of the last year. I mean, last year he played 15 games and only had 97 touches total. The year before that, he played in 13 games and had 98 touches. He's only got 1 year where he's, you know, played a full season. That's my question about Debo, but I think, again, you're splitting hairs because they're four and five, so who cares?
Yeah, well, except I don't have – let me see. Oh, never mind. I have DK six because I put Harris. I put Harrison above DK.
Yeah, and I think you could probably slot Harrison in above both Debo and DK, but I'm always, you know, like I've said all along, like I'll always acquiesce to guys that have actually done it.
That makes sense. But Harrison's a special guy. Like, we've, like, the receivers, even the seasons we've seen from rookies, the talent that Harrison is, the role he's going to play, what we're expecting out of Kyler Murray. I mean, DK, I still think, is more one trick pony than Harrison is. And I think that has, like, he's had good seasons. He's had the one great season, but I think Harrison has a potential to have a real special rookie season. I'm not saying like Puka's rookie, but really impactful, really impactful.
Yeah. And that's the hope, right? I mean, I don't want to say the expectation, but that's the hope when you draft somebody that high, and that he comes in, and especially when you're talking about a position group that was so bad. And now you can look at it and go, okay, how does that work? That's why it's always interesting too, is because, you know, you look at it and you rank the entire group now, right? And you have Ayuk one, and even if I, you know, say Ayuk one, the next two guys are the Rams.
Yeah.
And so
I ranked 9 receivers because actually, like, so Ayuk, Puka, Kupp, Debo, Harrison, DK. Then I go Jackson Smith and Jigba, Tyler Lockett, who's still fantastic, and then I do Zay Jones. And I still say Zay Jones perhaps is a better receiver than Michael Wilson, though Michael Wilson I think will have the bigger role in the bigger year. I'm not ready to push him over that. So I've got 9, and Seattle's the only team that's got 3. They're the top 3 receivers in that entire group.
Right. And so I would say that's the interesting thing, is I would say here's the thing. I would rank the Rams as the top group, because unless Kupp is just, you know, I don't want to say done, but, you know, so slowed down at this point that he can't get back to what he was or even close to what he was before, then they have 2 of the top 3. As you mentioned,
and Seattle first, because I like
their, yeah, you liked all 3.
The top 3. I think Lockett as their 3rd is significantly better than any other team in their 3rd.
But here's what I'll say, and this goes back to, again, like the uncertainty of things. I would put Seattle in front of San Francisco because we don't even know if Ayuk's going to be there.
That's true. I'm ranking these for me
based on
Ayuk,
like, now.
There. And so they've got Ayuk, Debo, and Juwan Jennings, which is, and I actually put them just above the Rams because of the Rams' 3rd receiver situation, which is what, DeMarcus Robinson.
Yeah, probably. And that's
I'm very on DeMarcus Robinson.
And that's why it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds for them, because, you know, the situation as is probably not tenable for them, right? Like, they got to figure out what they're going to do or end up losing an important piece to the roster. And so we'll see how that plays out. But, yeah, I think I would go Los Angeles, Seattle, San Francisco. And I think we both agree.
I don't think we have to debate why we put the Cardinals at the bottom.
I was going to say, I think we're both bullish on their potential to be above the bottom, but we're also both realistic enough to say that they'll probably be at the bottom to start the year.
I think division-wise, I think they're clearly the bottom. It's just that at least this year, hopefully that group isn't awful. That's the hope. What you'd love to see is, you know, Harrison have 1,100 yards, or somewhere between 1,100 and 1,300 yards. That you get, you get 600 to 800 yards from Michael Wilson, 600 to 800 yards from Zay Jones, 600 to 800 yards from Greg Dortch, right? Since we don't know how that's going to play out, but if you can get 6 to 8 or 5 to 800 yards from the other 3 guys, when nobody got to 600 yards, that was, and so yeah, you get that top production from Harrison, and then you get decent production out of the rest. You don't need a go-to number 2, so we don't need 2,000 yard guys, especially you got Trey McBride. You still have Trey McBride in the tight end position. So yeah, that's
right.
And with that, coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the last 2 units on the offense. We've got tight end and offensive line. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's look at the tight end rooms. We're going to talk the top 4 tight ends, then we'll look at the top 4 duos of tight ends. And would you still, I still put George Kittle at the top because he's done it, and he does it well, like, every part. He's a fantastic blocker. He's still, you know, even the down years that he's had, he still was so impactful. And if we look at his last season, he cracked 1,000 yards again. He didn't have the number of catches that Trey McBride had, 65 catches for over 1,000 yards, as opposed to Trey McBride's 81 catches for 825 yards. But, yeah, I put Kittle at top, then I follow Trey McBride. Would you still do that? Going into this season, well, maybe I should think like the way I did about Kyler Murray and say, okay, projecting this season, McBride will be better. And maybe we should rank them 1A, 1B. Maybe both number ones.
I think you still give Kittle the nod. I mean, it's fair. He's done it for longer. We want to see Trey do it for a full season, right? Like, that's always our big thing is, you know, a guy like Kittle, and it's always so weird to think about that this dude's been around for, this is his eighth season, because it just doesn't seem like it, right? But it's really hard to put Trey McBride over a guy that is been to the last three Pro Bowls, and then each of the last two seasons been on the All Pro team. Like, it's just one, it's not fair to McBride. Like, you still have to get to that level, right? And then two, it's not fair to Kittle in the sense of, you know, like,
well, he's
why
there.
Are we
like he's right? Like, you're, yeah, talking, and like he is over the last, like you say, Kelce, Kittle, and Mark Andrews. Those are the best tight ends in the NFL.
And that's what we're hopeful for with Trey. And the interesting thing is, and the one thing we've seen for a while about the tight end position, right, is that they can play for a while. And so the fact that Kittle will be 31 this year, I don't think it's as big of a deal as normal, but like you said, I think it definitely is, you know, from the tight end perspective, you look at it, it's Kelce, Kittle, and Andrews. And then the next generation is, you know, it's Hockenson, it's Laporta and McBride.
Yeah.
And you know, it'd be crazy awesome to see the Cardinals have a guy in that, because, you know, you're obviously a little bit older than me, but the reality is that Jay Novacek was the last, you know, good Arizona Cardinal, and that was the Phoenix Cardinals tight end, right? And,
yes.
And he ended up with those damn Dallas Cowboys. And so to even have the discussion that the Cardinals have the clear, in a way, second best tight end in the division with the trajectory pointing towards him potentially becoming the best tight end as soon as this year, that's awesome to even like be able to talk about, because it's just not something we've ever seen with this franchise.
And then the rest, the other two guys, so you've got Tyler Higbee and Noah Fant,
both excellent,
both solid, but you know what, they're absolutely unspectacular. And in fact, Tyler Higbee has, like, he had that 1 year a few years back, and you're like, oh, great. And then he's been magnificently okay since then. Higbee's okay. No offense, okay. But there's not, like, the gap between McBride and both of them is significant.
Well, and Higbee's another one that's interesting, because, I mean, he's going into year 9, and he's going to be 32 this year. And it's just crazy to think about that, because, like you said, he had that 2019 season where he had 734 yards, and you're going, okay, this guy is, you know, that was his age 26, and it was like, this guy's about to break out, like, he's going to be a problem for everybody. And then, you know, and I couldn't remember if he got injured, and obviously he's missed some games, so he's had some injuries, but like, there was no catastrophic injury that led to that. It was just, you know, it went from over 700 yards to 520, 560, you know, or 2 years ago, 620, but last year under 500 yards in 15 games. Like, he's obviously at the end of that career at this point. And, you know, it's really interesting. And then Fant, like you said, he's a good player. you know, he's the youngest outside of McBride of this group, but I mean, his career high 673 yards, and that was literally 4 years ago.
Yeah, like, and his production has dipped since then. It's from 673 to 670 to 46 to 414.
And you know, like you said, he hasn't even eclipsed 500 yards in two full healthy seasons. And again, health is relative, but he's played in every game for the Seattle Seahawks. So, you know, and again, we'll find out about the Seahawks more. You know, it's, I know it feels like we're crapping on them a lot. The reality is it's really difficult when you go from a guy, you know, having a system. And I know Pete Carroll wasn't the offensive guy, but having a system for over a decade. And now it's, we'll see what happens because we have no idea.
Yeah. And then if we look at the duos, the top duos. So in San Francisco, you got George Kittle and they added Logan Thomas. You've got Tyler Higbee. They added Colby Parkinson. You've got Trey McBride. You've got Elijah Higgins. And then Tip Raymond. I'm not going to put him as number two yet. And then you've got Noah Fant and Pharaoh Brown, whom they added this offseason. I don't think that's any question that we should say that the duo of Kittle and Thomas is by far the best, right?
Oh yeah, that's number one with the bullet. And you know, from there, I think it's not Colby Parkinson hasn't been bad, but he is, you know, unspectacular,
right?
But
you've got Higbee and Parkinson, which are two solid but unspectacular. McBride, you've got great, and then promising Higgins, and then you've got Fant, unspectacular, and Brown, sort of a guy.
Right. So I would probably say it's still the Niners, obviously, like we said, with the bullet, and then I would probably go, if I had to really pick, I would probably go Cardinals. That might be the homer in me in that sense.
I actually put the Rams ahead of the Cardinals, but that is, you know, Higgins is a wild card in this because he did look really good at the end of last year. We're talking any other year that Trey McBride doesn't do it, we would be gushing about Elijah Higgins going into this year, like Dan Arnold or Ricky Seals-Jones.
Right, exactly.
Every late-season productive tight end, we're like, he's the guy. But no, we've got the guy that's Trey McBride. And so Higgins has potential, but I'm going to go with two solid unspectacular over uncertain in this case.
Which I think is fair.
And then we go to the offensive line. Let's go by position. And then the units. Looking at left tackle, there's no question. It's Trent Williams. He's number one. Who do you put as number two, though? Here are the left tackles in the NFC West. You've got Trent Williams in San Francisco. You've got Charles Cross in Seattle. You've got Alaric Jackson in L.A. Now, Paris Johnson in Arizona. Who do you put as your number two behind Trent?
You know, I would probably, for now, put Cross. I don't love it.
I'm putting Paris. I'm like, I mean, he played solid right tackle, and I think he's going to be a better left tackle than he was a right tackle.
Yeah, and I respect that. I'll give the nod to Cross right now, and then, you know, obviously adjust once I see Paris play. The thing with Cross is that, you know, he took a step back from a really solid rookie season. And some of it was injuries. So we'll see how that kind of plays out this year and what he looks like. But I'd go Cross, and then Alaric Jackson would be my number four.
What about at left guard? We're Arizona, we've got, we're presuming Evan Brown. The Rams have Jonah Jackson. You've got Aaron Banks in San Francisco. And you've got Laken Tomlinson in Seattle, the newcomer, former 49er, former Jets. Adding to the mix there. Who's your number one left guard?
You know, it's probably Banks. Just looking, it's hard.
I got Jonah Jackson.
Oh, yeah, I forgot they brought in Jonah. You're right. I forgot about them adding Jonah Jackson to that group. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about guys in this group where, you know, you have you have some really solid players. But I think Jackson's the only guy that is probably at the level of, like, I don't want to say all pro because he's not, but, you know, a Pro Bowl level guy. The other guys are, you know, they're fine.
I gave Lakin, I gave Tomlinson a slight edge over Banks, but that's real close. Lakin's been doing it longer. Banks is the guy that took over for Tomlinson when they let him go. And I think Evan Brown, like the Cardinals, sorry, Evan Brown is going to be solid, but he's the number four. But that means this division's pretty okay at left guard.
Yeah. And he's just got to earn it, right? Yeah. Like, that's just the reality of it.
And at center, the Cardinals have Yelda Froholtz. The 49ers have Jake Brendel. And the Seahawks and the Rams both have new centers. Steve Avila, last year's second-round pick, is going to be their starting center. And the Seahawks, because Evan Brown left and signed with the Cardinals, it's either going to be Oluwatimi or the guy that they signed. I was just talking to the Seahawks guy. Dang it, I forgot his name.
I got it pulled up right here. Nick Harris.
And talking to Tim Weaver, we're going to lean Oluwatimi. Who's your number one center? Because
I think it's got to be Yelda.
I put Brendel just ahead of him.
I
was real close to putting Yelda. I'm like, which tells me, like, remember last offseason we were talking about they signed, what's a Yelda Froholt? And
right.
They can't go into this season with Yelda Froholt as their starter. Okay. All right. That was a very nice addition. I give Brendel just ever slightly the edge to over Yelda.
I'm going to go with Froholt because I think the pieces around Brendel are better and Froholt still perform better, if that makes sense. So, but I think those two are unquestionable, one and two. And then that's the hard part is I think you would probably rank Avila three.
Yes.
But he's, I mean, he was okay at guard. Like, he wasn't great by any means. And to now, I don't know what the wording I'm looking for is, but, like, to expect him to become
he was projected to be a great center.
But no, I'm not disagreeing with that. Right. But
he hadn't done it.
Right. And that's, and, you know, it's kind of the same thing I've said with Paris. Like, I'll give the nod to a guy that's done it, you know, over the guy that I think has far greater upside, but has not done it yet. So that'll be what's interesting to watch. And then Olu,
Oluwatimi.
Yeah. I had no idea. genuinely no.
He was one of the guys we looked at when the Cardinals were going to, we thought the Cardinals were going to draft a center and then didn't draft a center. So, oh, they did. I guess they drafted John Gaines, but yeah.
Right.
Right guard. Okay. Here's how I have the right guards ranked. You've got number one, Kevin Dotson, the very, very rich Kevin Dotson, followed by Will Hernandez, followed by, doesn't matter which one, whether it's John Feliciano or Spencer Burford in San Francisco, followed by the unknown, whether it's going to be Anthony Bradford or their rookie Christian Haynes in Seattle. That's how I have them ranked.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, I don't think that there's really a whole lot to debate on that position. Dotson's obviously the best. Hernandez is obviously the second best, and everything else is, okay, let's see what you guys can do.
At right tackle, okay, I have the Cardinals. I got Jonah Williams, number one right tackle. Number one right tackle over Rob Havenstein in Los Angeles.
And Havenstein is just, I mean, he's kind of at the end, right? I mean, he's very good. He's
very solid. Been,
yeah, I think that's a better way to put it. Very solid. He's been solid for a long time, but the reality is that he is a guy that, you know, is going to be 30, or he just turned 32. And he's slowed down quite a bit and really, really kind of struggled at the end of the season when they needed him to step up. And so we'll see kind of how that plays out. I mean, this is a guy that if he retired, I don't think anybody would be shocked, right?
Right.
Like he is, and it's not that he can't do it anymore, but I mean, you're talking about a 32-year-old that's played just a massive, massive amount of games in his career, been healthy, been successful. Like you said, solid, unspectacular career. You know, no Pro Bowls, no All Pros, 130 games in his career, all at right tackle for the Rams. You know, one season where he wasn't healthy. Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes it's
you wish you had that on the team. How do you rank? So for the Seahawks, I'm using George Fant instead of Abe Lucas because there's major concern about Abe Lucas's viability moving forward with his knee injury, which is why the Seahawks went and got George Fant. So you've got Colt McKivitz in San Francisco and George Fant in Seattle. Who do you give the edge over? Do you give it to McKivitz or to Fant?
I'd probably give it to McKivitz. It's not that same. I dislike Fant. It's just that
he's okay. You know, he's
well, and he's when fine. You when you can't win starting jobs in bad places or when teams are on the upswing, like we saw with like Houston last year, then going to a team like Seattle that's, you know, kind of in a similar situation. You know, and again, this dude's 32, like he's going to be 32 in 2 weeks. Like it's not like he's a spring chicken anymore. So it'll just be interesting. And again, a guy like Fant has carved out an amazing career as an undrafted free agent out of Western Kentucky. I mean, the fact that this dude's been in the NFL for 7 seasons, played in 99 games, started 73 games, like that's unbelievable. And he's just kind of at the end right now.
So now, how do you rank the units? Here's how I have mine. If you're talking about the unit as a whole, I've got San Francisco. I've got Arizona, but it's pretty close. Then I've got LA, and then I got Seattle. Seattle is largely expected to have a terrible offensive line. It's ranked very lowly. But yeah, I like Arizona's offensive line, but San Francisco's, like, their left side is just really good. I like the Cardinals' tackle situation and their right guard, and their center is pretty solid. But I just like, I think San Francisco as a unit just continues to be, I mean, it's hard to say anything other than that, but based on the way that offense produces.
Yeah. And so I think you're right with that. I think you look at it and you say it's San Francisco, it's Arizona. You could probably put the Rams in front of the Cardinals if you really buy into Avila, right?
Yeah.
Like if you buy into Avila that he's going to be average to above, and then Jackson.
I like Paris Johnson more than Lyric Jackson, and I like Yelda more than Avila. And technically, I have Jonah or Williams over Havenstein, but you, they've got the best guards.
Right. And so that's what it comes down to. So, I mean, I think it's San Francisco, and the strength of San Francisco isn't the overall line. That's the funniest part. I just think that how good Trent Williams is makes it like, oh, this whole team is good. Yeah. Because, you know, if Williams is out, and obviously you could say this about any player that's the best, you know, the best player in the NFL at his position. But like, if Williams goes down, there's a realistic conversation that they're the worst offensive line in the NFC West. And so that's what's so hard, because so much of it weighs on one guy. Whereas like the Rams, like you said, that right side especially, and then potentially Jonah Jackson with, you know, getting back to what he was the year previous. And we'll see with Avila, because the Cardinals have Will Hernandez, who is really good, bordering on great. You have Paris Jackson, who everybody's excited for, and you have Jonah Williams, who's, again, good. And then we just talked about Froholt was an anomaly last year, but we go back to earlier conversations of we need to see it in year two, right? Like, this has to be a two-year thing and not the anomaly of like, oh, he was just the best of a bad offensive line, and instead be like, oh, this guy's really, really good. So, but yeah, I think you go San Francisco, Arizona, LA, and realistically you could put those three in any order, and I don't think anybody would be too upset.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best Jar of Cardinals Talk on the web. We have ranked the offenses of the NFC West. We'll be back later this week to rank the defenses. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sierra podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.